And we are live for the 145th episode of the Bronx Bomber Battle Podcast, presented to you by Six Pack Coverage. I am your host, Matt Loves Luigi, and tonight, it's me, it's Alex, and it's Andrew. How are we doing, guys?
We're doing pretty decent.
We're doing.
Alex. That's what we want to hear.
That's how you really feel, Alex.
Yeah, no, Alex sounded like he was on like the phone with a hostage, and like his family asked to speak to him.
I have a gun to my head right now, being forced to say this. Would you like my thoughts on why we're doing
pretty decent with a gun to our heads?
No. So right now, you look at the world of Yankees baseball, and Cole threw a shutout yesterday. Pretty happy with that. The Yankees ended up splitting the series against the Twins after having about just the worst possible start to the series. But at the same time, stands dead again. And all the problems that we talked about last time are still there. So, yeah.
And that's the show. That's the show. Alex summarized the whole thing. There's a week in 60 seconds. We'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, Alex kind of really blew up my spot there. But, yeah, look, 16 games in, right? Yankees are 10-6. Surprisingly, right, the winning four straight series to start the year, they only had done that, three other times in their history. That's something that you would think they would have done more. But, you know, winning four straight series to start the year is very impressive. Obviously, that ended by splitting to the Twins 2 out of 4. So they still haven't lost a series, but
they're the only team in baseball that hasn't lost a series yet.
Right. Very interesting week of Yankees baseball, though, right? Obviously, we potted after the Monday game. That was, you know, 2 runs right away. They don't score the rest of the game. The loss Friday was similar to that, too, right? Obviously, shout out Anthony Volpe getting his first career home run. Judge follows him up right after, but they end up losing that game 4-3. Right? So those were kind of 2 similar losses. And then the other loss, obviously, was I don't remember the last time I was watching the game on my laptop. I don't remember the last time I closed my laptop after the top of the first inning. For a Yankee game. Like, I do not remember the last time. I usually maybe the third inning, or even if it's like 10-2 or something, I'll usually just keep the game on.
I think the earliest I've ever, like, when I started watching the game from the beginning, the earliest I can remember ever shutting it off was the playoff game in 2018 against the Red Sox when they won like 16-1 or something. And I think I shut it off in like the fourth inning. When it was like 10-0 or something like that.
Thank you for bringing back another awful memory, Alex. Really appreciate that.
That's what I'm here for. Bringing back everyone's PTSD.
This is just our trauma session.
But really, that was a why. You know, obviously, of course, you know, shout out Johnny Brito. Like, oh, man, he's really, not to hold it against the guy, right? Sometimes, like, that just, the Twins were just on everything, right? You saw they brought Colton Brewer in. He was, you know, more of the same. It was 11-0 in the blink of an eye. But overall, right, the Yankees, it's kind of been the same all year, right? They haven't looked phenomenal in any games, but, I mean, I think we should start off the show and kind of, you know, just go into this. Alex, you already mentioned it, but, I mean, Gerrit Cole, I mean, just absolutely unbelievable. Another four starts, four wins. He was the AL player of the week this past week. He's been phenomenal. Complete game, 2-hit shutout yesterday against a very good Twins lineup that, you know, a few nights ago were just hitting everything, right? 11 runs in 3 innings. So, like, that's a very good lineup. And, yeah, what did we say on the season preview pod? We're going to need Gerrit Cole to step up, right? We're going to need, you know, especially the 3 of the 5 projected starting pitchers for the Yankees were out, right? We knew we were going to need Cole to really, you know, and look, just think of it. Yankees are 10-6 and they're 4-0 in Cole starts. Cole's, you know, 2, and I know it's like you can't, you know, really focus too much on records this early, but, you know, if Cole's 2-2, 1-3 in his starts, he has a bad start. The Yankees are a 500 or below 500 team right now. And, you know, like obviously the Rays are starting to cool down after, you know, winning 12 straight, but, you know, they're 14-2 right now, right? I know they're down right now against the Reds, but it looks like the Rays are going to have a great year, right? So, yeah, we really needed, we said it before the season even started, we needed Cole to be the ace, and he's been the best pitcher in baseball, easily. It's really been no contest. I mean, he's been unbelievable.
I think one of the big things with him, too, is that, like, you look at his numbers for this year, and obviously they're fantastic, but the one that really stands out to me is the fact that he hasn't given up a home run. Like we're four. He's four. He's started four games. He has not given up a home run.
And how much did we beleaguer the point that he led the league in home runs a lot last year? And for him to be as good as he has this year.
In his 3 years with the Yankees so far, 2020, he gave up 14 home runs in just 73 innings, which that's a lot. 21, he gave up 24. Last year, he gave up 33. Like, you look at the last 3 years, it's just looked like he's slowly getting worse and worse and more, you know, hittable. But this year, he's completely turned back the clock. It goes back to in how he looked in 2019 with the Astros. So
I'll tell you, I think more than anything else, and I could be completely wrong here, right? But I wonder how much of an impact the pitch clock is having on him. Like, he seems to be like a guy who actually likes getting into a rhythm. Like, get the ball, fire it in, don't think about it, no shaking off the catcher, no throwing over to first base, no worrying about it. And we worried about, like, how much is he in his own head with the home runs. Like, I don't think he's a mental midget, so to speak. But there have been moments where it's like, remember that game against the Red Sox, that Apple TV game in September when he didn't get the strike three call against Verdugo and then immediately gave up the game-tying home run. And you're just like, dude, like, you got to be – mentally stronger than this.
Yeah.
But like with the pitch clock, he doesn't have time to be in his own head. He's just firing like and dominating people.
Instead of just like thinking everything over in his own head, he just goes. He doesn't have time to like think about what he's gonna do. He just him and Trevino, we're on the same page. Like, you know, don't even think about it. You just see the sign. Okay, that's what we're doing. Throw it, nail it. You know,
and also I know this kind of went away last year, but it was a talking point for his first 2.5 seasons in pinstripes. The whole Garrett's got to pitch to Higgy. That thing is so that ship is far sailed, which I'm so glad at. Like he could just whoever's behind the plate. And the numbers actually skewed that he pitched better with Trevino last year. And clearly he's had no issue throwing him this year. I'm so glad that Garrett Cole, the ace of the staff, the guy making $36 million a year, doesn't need a designated catcher.
Yeah, like
that's a huge win for us,
especially with someone like Higashioka, who he's not an everyday catcher. And, you know, the Yankees have definitely realized that in the last few years. So having to designate every five games that he needs to play, it straightjackets the lineup a little bit, because that means Higashioka has to play this day, meaning Trevino has to catch every other pitcher. Or
he did hit a home run this weekend.
No, I'm not shitting on Higgy himself. I'm saying he has to catch Cole puts the Yankees in a bit of a situation where they're not going to be as flexible with the catching situation.
And you know, something else, because, you know, most of the game yesterday, I just listened to the game, but, you know, something else I've noticed with Cole, and still, you know, four starts, small sample size, but he's not striking out as many guys so far. Now, he's still above, you know, I think he's at 10.2 Ks for nine, right? He's at 32 strikeouts in 28 third innings, right? But, you know, last year, he was 11.5. Year before that, he was at 12.1, 11.6, 13.8. So, like, obviously, you know, through four starts, he probably, you know, if he stays healthy, has 25 more. But, you know, as of now, that would be his lowest strikeout per nine since, you know, his Pittsburgh days. Yeah. And, you know, like, at a certain point, who gives a shit, right? If you're just going to go out and he has a 0.95 ERA right now, right?
Well, because the thing with strikeouts is, like, they're good. But I think
he uses a lot of pitches, man.
Exactly. People overhype strikeouts because of how many pitches it takes to strike people out.
How many Cole starts has he had that's like he's through four innings and they don't have any runs, but he's at 77 pitches. Right? Yeah. And you're like, and then he knows that he starts throwing the ball in the zone a bit more and he starts getting hit a bit.
Right.
More.
When you're a strikeout pitcher and you're actually focused on that, you don't have trusting your stuff to play the contact. You don't trust the defense behind you. Certainly not having IKF behind him has been, I'm sure, a nice confidence boost as well. But yeah, like you guys mentioned, the pitch count comes up, but also at a certain point you start aiming and he's not doing that. He's just throwing. He trusts his stuff. There were some spots in Sunday's game where he definitely missed location, but it ended up in an equally as unhittable spot. Now, obviously, some of those times, they're going to be cookies and they're going to get hit. That's fine. There was that ball that probably should have gone out on a warmer day, though it was pretty warm yesterday in the Bronx. You know, the one that got caught, I think it was Trevor Larnach, hit it right to the wall.
Yeah, the one that Oswaldo made it look like it was going out.
Right, but just – you're right. It doesn't seem like his strikeouts are down, per se. Louis Jenner, you dropped the numbers. I said they very clearly are. But watching the games – on TV, in the ballpark, wherever you're seeing them, it doesn't feel like he's not getting his strikeouts. Like, I think he's hit double digits in three of his four starts, right? or maybe
just it helps that he's also going deep into games, though. Like Luigi said, right. Last year it seemed like he was going, you know, 5-6 innings, but he'd have 10-11 strikeouts. Or now it's 7 innings, you know, 9 innings, 8, you know, 7 1/3, whatever he's done, and he's still getting 9-10 strikeouts. But you know, it is a little less in comparison, just because he's throwing more innings, because he has more pitches to work with now, because of the fact that he's not focusing so much on strikeouts. He's focusing more on just getting hitters out. You look at yesterday.
And I know one of you sent that, what was it, the Pitching Ninja one? One of the two of you sent it.
Yeah, that was me.
In our group chat yesterday. I think it was what? It was the knuckle curve and the fastball. Like halfway to the plate, they were in the exact same spot, and then they go complete opposite directions. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that his release point and the actual arc of the baseball halfway to the plate is identical, then here you have no chance.
Yeah. Well, you look at Cole right now, and he looks like DeGrom during DeGrom's like Cy Young days with the Mets. And like the one thing that you would always see with him was that his release point was exactly the same, no matter what he was throwing. And you'd have the Pitching Ninja overlays of his fastball, his slider, everything looked exactly the same. And you had no idea where it was going to be. You just had to guess. And that's what Cole looks like right now, because his release point, he's perfected it where that every single thing is exactly the same. He's not tipping any type of pitches at all. And his pitches, when they come out of his hand, they all look the same, and then they move. So as a hitter, you're basically just guessing, and you can't guess and be successful against a guy who's as good as Cole is.
Yeah, and just some more quick stats about Cole. 3 of his 4 starts have been at home, and his 3 home starts, 21 1/3 inning, 8 hits, 1 run, and 29 strikeouts. And he has had 2 10 strikeout games, right? He had 10 strikeouts yesterday against the Twins. Opening day against the Giants, he had 11. But against Cleveland, he had 3.
Right? It was that one Cleveland start that's dropping off his averages. Outside of that, he's at over a strikeout per inning. He's everything that he's always been.
Now, you look at the Cleveland start, right? Because that was the game after our last pod. And I guess you could say statistically that was his worst start of the year. But honestly, that's the one that stands out to me as probably one of his more impressive ones. Obviously, yes, the shutout was the best one. But you look at that Cleveland start. In the first inning, he kind of had nothing.
Wasn't that the game that he got blooped to death? Was that the one that like 4 balls fell right in front of Hicks?
Yep. Yeah.
And then was that the next game, right, where the replay, like Hicks dropped the ball?
It was the afternoon right after that night game.
But Cole in the first inning had absolutely nothing on his fastball, and they were saying on the broadcast yesterday he recognized in the first inning that Cleveland was picking up his fastball immediately, so he just scrapped it and he threw off speed for another 6 innings after that. And he only got 3 strikeouts out of it because his fastball is probably his best pitch. But he still managed to get everyone out and get him out quickly, which was wild. Yeah. The ability to just pivot and handle any type of situation like that, like if all of a sudden
that's shit right there.
Yeah. That shows you just how good of a pitcher he is.
Something my old coach used to say, you know, who was, you know, a minor league pitcher and was like a pitching type of coach, always used to say the mark of a great pitcher is being able to go out there, have a quality start when you don't have your best stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Like any great pitcher, when they feel good, is going to be able to go out there and dominate. Right. Like there's like, you know, you could name like 20 guys off the top of your head that when they're on, they look like they're the best pitcher in the league. But really, it's about
on the other day, you know,
exactly. When you go out, like, you know, all these major league pitchers have the ability to go out there and throw a complete game shutout. It's about when you don't have your good stuff, being able to tough it out, being able to, you know, not to shit on the guy, but not do what Johnny Brito did, right? And just give up 7 runs. And it's like, well, game's over. Like, that's it. Like, top of the first inning. Like that, like I said, that's the sign. And even, you know, we've talked about this in prior episodes. But, I mean, look, it's funny because it was against the Twins as well. But, you know, remember Cole gave up, what was it, 4 home runs in an inning? And then and still went 4 shutout innings afterwards. Like, that's the sign of a great pitcher.
Yeah.
It's just being able to have a short memory. Like, I don't care if I just gave up 4 home runs in a row. I'm still going to challenge the next guy in the box, right? Because that's how you have to pitch. So,
you want to be able to give your team a chance to win. And that's what Cole exactly. does pretty much every time he goes out there.
Yeah, this may be the best version of him we've seen thus far. I know it's only 4 starts, so it's not a huge sample size.
I mean, absolutely.
But if you think about everything he's done in his, I want to say 5, maybe 6 postseason starts for the Yankees, I don't think he's had his good stuff in any of them. Like, obviously, he got blasted. I would
say the only one he did is that one against Cleveland in 2020, where he had like 13 or 14 strikeouts.
But even then, didn't he give up like 3 extra base hits to Naylor?
I think he did give up a couple.
I think
runs
Naylor
was
the only one that got.
That was the game where they hit a bunch of home
he's
runs.
He's never had. Though, right? You're saying he's never had like a truly like dominant shutdown start. Yeah.
Right. Like you look at the starts against Tampa in 2020. We won game 1. We did not win game 5. It was the Mike Brasso game. He didn't look great in either game. He was better in game 1. Did enough to win. Game 5, I think he exited with like a 1-1 tie. 2021.
I think he only went like four innings, right? In that game. I think
maybe
4 or 5. Yeah.
2021 wild card, he obviously got blasted, and then he had 2 good outings. I think his best start for the Yankees, or at least the one that you hold closest to your heart, was the one in Cleveland last year when we were down 2-1 to save our season and force game 5 back in the Bronx.
He won that series, you know.
Yeah.
And
but even then, he hasn't had his Houston Astros days.
Like he did yesterday. You know, there has not been a playoff start where he's gone out there and you look back on it and go, yeah, they had no chance against him. Like the Twins.
Like when we faced him with Houston in 2019.
Exactly.
Like we're not touching him at all. We haven't seen him do that in pinstripes. But like the fact that he can, on a day like you mentioned in Cleveland, his last start out, just not have his great stuff and just battle through, give up a couple runs early, but then just completely shut the door.
Settled down.
And that's exactly what Bieber did in the first game of that series against us.
Yeah.
We had him on the ropes. It was right after we podcasted right after. Like, we thought we were going to be up 6-0 in the first inning of that game. We didn't score again after the Stanton 2-run double.
Yeah.
That was it. It's what aces need to do.
2 runs scored on the 4th batter of the game. Nothing else after that.
Yeah.
And that's not even like part of that. Is a mark of the Yankees offense being, you know, unpredictable. But another part of that is Bieber's a fantastic pitcher and he settled down after that.
Yeah. He did the same thing.
Yeah,
he did the same thing Cole did. But so, yeah, obviously we could talk about Cole all night with the way he's pitched so far this season. I mean, yeah, like you kind of ask yourself, like, could this, because, you know, it's something I mentioned on like the preseason pod was that, you know, Cole really hasn't had that great season with us yet. He hasn't had, like, it's been all right. He's been good. He's been solid. But could this be the year? It's still early, right? 4 starts down, probably 20 or so to go at least. But so, I mean, so far you literally can't have a better start. But guys, let's talk now. You know, we've been raving about Cole. Let's go to another guy who, you know, big part of our offense, who's having a solid start to the season and now is a grade 2 hamstring strain. So, Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, anytime you hear grade 2, I mean, it's probably out at least a month.
They said best case scenario is 4 to 6 weeks. And
like that, and you know the Yankees. Like when I say at least a month, it's like
he's not even just the Yankees. It's the fact that it's Stanton in particular, takes longer to heal than anyone else.
And look, this is something I think we've kind of had this has been a very there's always a lot of interesting debates in Yankee Twitter and Yankee world, whatever. And one of them has been Stanton, and I find it very interesting with Stanton because you know there's people who say, well, you know, I think I've said before that, I don't, you know, obviously the whole, if you listen to this pod long enough, years ago, I said we signed Stanton, that jokingly, and it became a running joke. But seriously, since we acquired Stanton, you know, especially, you know, the fact he had that MVP year, he really never lived up to what we expected him to be. He just hasn't. Now he's, you know, people have warmed to Stanton and I give him credit. He's been a great Yankee. He's never with the whole booing thing. He's gotten booed more than anyone. He never gave a shit. He always said, yeah, I suck. They should boo me. I always gave him credit for that. But there's just something he just hasn't lived up. And one of the things is he's been hurt. Right. And here we go again. Like, all right, this guy's probably going to miss another 40-50 games this year. And
the worst part is it's always right when he's starting to get hot, right? Every time he's come back from injury, it takes him 4 or 5 weeks to figure it out. Like, I think last year when he came back, he had that stretch where he was, we talked about it before, he was 4 for 40 and 4 were solo home runs or something like that. But then he literally did nothing else in the other bats. It always happens that he's, 15 games into the season, not a huge sample size, but he looked like he was going to have a representative season, right? Like he's going to play 120 games. His batting average was what? I think like 270, 275, something like that. Popped a couple homers.
He had like four homers in his first 40 at bats. It's like, all right.
Drove in like 10, 15 runs already. They were saying on the end broadcast that he was, like this was the first time in his career through like 10 games or something, he had three home runs with 10 RBIs or something. It was like, he was off to the best start that he's had in his career.
Yeah. And like, look, like I said, this is just like he's, you know, look, the amount of, obviously 2020, you have to take with a grain of salt, but look, first year with us, he plays 158 games, right? Then it's the 2019 fiasco, he only played 18. Then 2020, he played 23 or 60, but yeah, whatever. 21, he plays 139, and then last year he plays 110, and now, you know, now we have this year. Who knows how many he's going to play? And, you know, something that I feel like a lot of people have said, like, that, like, well, because I think I forget who said it, but, you know, they were like, oh, well, Stanton, he's been so great in the postseason that, like, it's okay. He's excused. And I'm like, look, Stanton has had some very good postseason moments, right? Don't get me wrong. But it's like, let's not act like Stanton's hitting 450 in the postseason that warrants him being hurt like this all the time. It's like, bro, the guy's a 260 career postseason hitter with a 960 OPS. That's very good. That's very 960 career OPS. That's very good. But it's like, it's not so like so amazing that like, all right, yeah, he could just get hurt and miss an average of 40, 50 games a year and it's fine. You know, yeah, like plus, I said, it's
plus if the Yankees are going to make the playoffs this year, they need him in the lineup. Like yeah. It's not and a like shoo-in that they make the playoffs this year. They're going against two teams that are in the AL East that probably are going to make the playoffs. The Orioles and the Red Sox are wild cards. Like you don't know with the AL East right now. The Yankees could finish fourth for all we know. Like
yeah.
Even if Stan is around for the playoffs, it's not going to help if the Yankees aren't in the playoffs. And the way they get there is with Stan healthy, because that's the entire point of a regular season.
Yeah, that a guy's got to be healthy for the playoffs. The argument really only matters in football, right? Because those games are concentrated to one-week playoffs. If you can find a way to scratch and claw during the regular season to at least get into the dance, you get your good players back healthy.
And football's so volatile. Right? Too because
but baseball is such a marathon. Yeah, but well, baseball you can fall out of it so fast. Not that Stanton being in or out of the lineup is going to be the difference in like 30 wins for the Yankees, but still like it's going to be impactful. We're going to have Josh Donaldson hitting cleanup in a few days when he comes back, if not Gleyber Torres. Like I don't feel good about that.
Or Franchi like at this point.
Yeah.
Right.
There's definitely going to be a punt lineup.
Alex is going to get mad because I'm going to do a cross-sport analogy. But really, like sports like the NBA and the NBA and NHL, like more than half the teams make the playoffs. Like you could almost afford like, oh, well, that guy's missing the season. Ah, what? Like baseball, it's not like that, man. Especially we are in the toughest division in baseball. Yeah. Like, you know, we see what the Rays are doing. The Blue Jays are off to a solid start. Right. And even like, you know, we all joke about the Red Sox. It's like, dude, the Red Sox are not a bad team. Like they're not a good team. Don't get
me
wrong,
but
like
any other division, they would have a solid shot of making the playoffs.
This is what I said about the Red Sox last year. They are a great worst team in the division.
Yeah.
Like usually you want your worst team in the division to be like a 60-win fit, you know, team that just sucks. They do not suck. Like they,
You expect the 4th and 5th place teams in your division to finish like how the Rockies and the A's will end up finishing this year.
We don't have any of those laughing stock teams. You know, even the Red Sox
Orioles
had a bad
last year,
they're not a laughing stock.
Fourth, and we're over 500. You know, like this is not a normal division. There's a world that's very likely where all five teams finish above 500 this year.
Speaking of not normal, just quick side note, Kevin Gausman gave up 7 runs in the first inning for the Astros. So
good Lord.
Cool. Yep. I just noticed that. But anyways, yeah, look, it's something that, like you say, it's a great point, Alex. I think, especially with, you know, the fact that, you know, have almost 30 straight winning seasons and, you know, they almost, especially the last few years since that drought they had, you know, the 14, 15, 16 era. They pretty much make the playoffs every year, but really that's no guarantee, man. And especially like our lineup with Stanton was decent at best, right? You know, Rizzo started like went through power 3 home runs this series, right? He's starting to get going, but man, like you know, DJ obviously looks better. That's good to see, but even with that being said, it's still not that good of a lineup. And a guy like Stanton going down, it really because look, even yesterday's game. Cole has the complete game shutout, but it's one of those where you're like, oh, two runs for the Yanks, right? Like, you know,
right.
A
and
DJ
how many moments
shot.
did you stop and say that to yourself during the game yesterday? That it's like, you know, Cole is prone to a blow up inning, and it didn't happen. Obviously, he looked unhittable yesterday. Yeah. Thank God he went 9 shutout innings. But the Yankees won that game. Did they tacked only? Was it 4-0 or did it say 2?
No, it was 2-0.
Yeah, 2-0.
So, okay.
So I'm thinking of Saturday when they tacked on late.
But really, your ace is literally pitching as great as he can, and we are a bloop and a blast away from it being a tie game. It's like it's not ideal. I feel like they've had a lot of games. It's funny, the game after, remember on the pod, like we all said after the last pod, we said, what were we looking for? And I said, I need the Yankees to have like a, you know, just an offensive explosion. And, you know, they had 11 runs the next game. So that was, it was good to see, right? Franchi gets another home run. It was great to see, but it really, it's just, there's just way too many games where this offense is just so lackluster. And like, it really, like, I think we're going to probably say this on every episode this season, because we all saw it coming. You know, we all knew it was going to be, you know, not adding a bat to an already, you know, an offense that got, you know, swept out of the ALCS. This is how it was going to go. And of course,
the guy that has the most potential
other than Judge is now out for probably at least the next couple months.
You look at it, Judge obviously is still the Yankees' best hitter. And after that, Rizzo is their second best. Don't get me wrong. I love Anthony Rizzo, and Glaber, I think I'm way more optimistic about than, you know, you are, Andrew. But
it's fair.
You don't want them to be your second and third best.
You want them to be your fourth, fifth, and sixth best hitters.
Yeah, you need one, two, three guys in between the Judges and the Glabers in the lineup.
Right, like we need Cabrera to go mental, to Volpe to have burst on the scene and been insane. Like, you know what you're going to get from Aaron Judge. That's fine. 5 home runs. I think his OPS is sitting around 1,000 early in the year.
Around 1,000, yeah.
Like, that's what you expect from your MVP-level player. But if he's the only guy, that lineup doesn't scare you. I know the names, like, if they're healthy late in the season or October, whatever it may be, right, you have to go through Judge, Rizzo, Stanton, Donaldson, Torres. The name value of those guys, sure, but if you can set that aside, like, what pitcher looks at Josh Donaldson in the year 2023 and says, yeah, I can't get this guy out?
It depends on how he comes back. Like, for all we know, Donaldson made a lot of adjustments in spring training. He simplified a lot of his batting stance, and we didn't really get to see how it turned out because he got injured. So I'm willing to give Donaldson.
But again, even his injury was a hamstring. There's high risk of re-injury.
No, and like I said, I'm willing to give Donaldson the benefit of the doubt here and give him a chance to prove himself. But if he ends up just looking like how he did last year, like, he's going to be fourth or fifth in the lineup with a, you know, 670 OPS. Like,
but we talk about the Yankees not adding a bat in the offseason. The biggest thing is that they gassed up Donaldson as, oh, that MVP level bat is still in there.
Yeah. He's 37 years old.
How much do you genuinely expect from a guy like that? And clearly, and either they lied to us as fans, they gaslit the fan base, or they ignorantly convinced themselves that he could
still put up those old numbers. Yeah, or they legitimately think that. Yeah.
And that's sad.
Or both. Or both. Yeah.
Like, a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like I said, we said it all off season, and yeah, here we are. And it just sucks because, look, Stanton may not be, like, if you had to rank the best hitters on the Yankees, maybe you rank Rizzo above Stanton just consistency-wise, but that ceiling, Stanton's ceiling is so high, and we saw it, right?
Ceiling is close to Judge's,
The four, you know, the almost 500-foot home run, right?
Yeah.
You know, just him ripping the hell out, like, he has the big double the other day. It really, it's just so, and now you're in a situation where you're like, okay, so Donaldson had a hamstring. Stanton has a hamstring. Bader has an oblique. Like, bro, even when these guys come back, half the lineup is going to be dealing with injuries. And it's not like these guys are 24, 25. Like, bro, like, we got a 33-year-old Stanton. We got a 37-year-old Donaldson. Like, guys that age, when they get hamstrings and obliques, it's not like it's one thing if you get, like, hit in the, you know, by a pitch and you have, like, a bad bruise and you're out for a couple weeks. That's one thing. But when it's like you're running out of the box and you pull something, that's usually like a bad sign, right? Like, that's a sign of, like, hey, you're old as shit and your body's breaking down. Okay, that's usually what that means. Like that, and really, because people say, "Oh, well, he's going to come back." And look, man, you can't assume a 37-year-old is going to come back from a ham. Even Bader, like, you know, Bader's not 30 yet, but still, he's a guy that's had injury issues, and you know, like obliques are. That's just like the worst, almost one of the worst words you could hear for like an injury, right? You'd almost rather anything else than an oblique because it really. There's just such a history for guys,
broken
even if they have
better than an oblique.
Yeah, even if they have like an oblique, like the I saw something like when guys say they have an oblique injury, like at the start of the year, like the average is like just terrible, like everything's terrible. Like guys
the whole
just don't come back.
You're
from
overcompensating,
yeah.
or afraid to swing full it's, go it's, because you don't want to re-injure.
The only
look back, look
an
back
oblique
at
injury is the only thing that thing's gonna cure is the off season. Usually.
Look back at 2019, you know, Judge pulled his oblique. And yeah. He was not right until September.
Yeah.
Like, he came back, I want to say, like, end of July, beginning of August. And that whole, for a month, he couldn't pull anything. You guys remember? He'd be hitting home runs to right field. It took him, like, a month to pull a home run.
Yeah.
And that was entirely because of the injury. Because your obliques affect your... like your hips and how you move your body.
And now, obviously, Bader's a much smaller guy with a shorter swing.
Right.
And hopefully it's less impactful than, well, younger than 2019 Judge. Probably about the same age.
I'm saying I was referencing like Donaldson in terms of like Donaldson and Stanton, you know, in general. But
yeah.
It's just in general. It's not even just, it's like I said, it's like, all right, the more and more guys that are just getting early, even if they're out, oh, he's this guy's out for 3 weeks, this guy's out for 6 weeks. It's like, all right, now. Are like, you know, because it's still Bader, Stanton, like these guys are still in, you know, Donaldson, they're still in the A lineup. Like they're still in, okay, create the best line for the Yankees. They're still, so now three of the guys in our best lineup are now dealing with injuries. It's, you know, and it's like, really, it's like we are 16 games into the season. Like that's what's so frustrating. It's like you say to yourself, like, Brent, you got like, and obviously, it's, you know, it's all the old meme of like, you know, the guy saying like, oh, I would do the guy on the couch with like eating the chips being like, why isn't he doing this? Why? It's so easy to like feel like that. But really, at a certain point, you got to say like, yo, these guys are professional athletes playing, you know, the highest level of baseball. Like you should not be like, we should not have this many injuries. And it's like, really, this isn't like the first year we're dealing with this. It's,
right.
It's
at a certain point, yes, you have to put some of the blame on the training staff, but also like, bro, stretch.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Like, no, Andrew, you were getting shit about Stanton, but you're because they're like, oh, the training staff. You were just like, dude, Stanton's like sometimes I don't think everything's the training staff. Like,
I
Stanton
tweeted from our BBB account the other day. It's like at a certain point, when do you realize that this specific body type isn't going to get you to the end of your contract or something along those lines? Like, yeah, I love that he's got these big, gigantic muscles. He can hit a ball 120 miles per hour off the bat. He can hit a ball almost 500 feet to dead center field. That's awesome. But if he's not sustainable long term, you got to figure out a way to change your offseason regimen. Look at Judge. He incorporated yoga and like, knock on wood, hasn't really gotten hurt in the last 2 years since because he realized, like, I'm going to stretch more. I'm going to be more loose and limber and not just have these glamour muscles.
It's not even a thing. Like, just think of it. It's not even just like a baseball thing. Just because like it's so hard to use base because let's think of it. There's not a lot of like big hitters like Judge and Stanton. But so you have to almost look to other sports to find comparable athletes to them, right? But like if you look at like big hockey players or big boxers, these guys aren't like bodybuilders. They got a little fat on them. It's okay. Like, they know what sport they're playing. And it's not even like they're fat, but it's like there's a difference between being like, let's say you're 6'4", 250, you know, Stanton's what, like 6'5", 250? It's like you could be a 6'5", 250 ripped, but then you could also be a 6'5", 250, a little softer, not as defined, but still very strong, right? It's like, I really do think that, like, because really, so many guys, like, even like with bigger fighters, like most big fighters, they say the perfect body type isn't a guy with a six pack and like, you know, chest like this. It's a guy who has a little fat on him, so he can be a little more agile. And I think Stanton, he's just never understood that, you know, and obviously certain guys, they probably just like care about how they look too much. But really, there's a reason why you don't see guys who are just jacked like that in baseball because it's not sustainable. Like, that's why it's like that.
Do you guys remember in, like, when Severino got called up in 2015 and he made his debut and he was fantastic? And then over that offseason, they said he put on like 20 pounds of muscle or something, came out in 2016 and got absolutely blasted. And then he worked throughout the, he got either injured or sent down, and then came back as a reliever, which was fantastic because he worked on becoming much more agile.
Yeah, and he was way skinnier. Like, remember him coming back, and he just
at the beginning of the season, he was so much more jacked. And there, like you said, Luigi, there's a difference between having a lot of muscle and being able to use it, and having a lot of muscle and just having a lot of muscle. You look at these gigantic, huge, big, strong guys that, you know, their arms are a foot out from their sides because their biceps are
like they can't even like touch their face, right?
You that does not make you agile. It makes you can lift up a car, but you're not going to be able to turn while you're holding the car, you know? And there stands one. Yes, he can hit a ball 9 miles, but if you can't stay on the field for longer than 100 games a season, and you can only hit a ball 9 miles 20 times a year, when instead if you loosened up a little bit and you might be able to hit a ball 420 feet as opposed to 480, but you were able to stay on the field and hit 40, 45 home runs a season consistently, that is much more conducive to being successful in the big leagues. Stan has 300 and what? He's mid 300s in career home runs, and he's been around since 2010.
He's close to 400.
This is a guy that has not really had a full season. He's had, in his 13 years, he's had like three different years where he's played 140, 150 or more games. And, you know, one of them, he won an MVP at 59 home runs. Another one was his first year at the Yankees. He started out tough. He still hit 38 home runs. And then in 2014, he still finished in he did 37. He finished second in the NL MVP voting. Basically, other than that, he has not had a full season where he wasn't injured.
And remember, Stan's Marlins years, remember, that was when, like, the league leader in home runs would have, like, 41, 42.
Yeah, and he led still the popping league out, like, with 35. 37 home runs.
Yeah,
like, this is a guy I do want to at least put a little asterisk on a few of those Marlins years, though, because it was that year he got hit in the face with a pitch. I think another one he took
and that's
fastball,
fair.
Broke his hand or something like that. And those are, like, completely not his fault.
Those are freak injuries.
But yeah, is, like, generally speaking, guy, I thought of that bad.
This is a guy that could legitimately be on, like, a 600 home run pace for his career. And he's not going to sniff that because of injuries. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, he's at 382 right now. If he comes back healthy in June, could he get to 400 by the end of this year? Sure, but he's, what, 33, 34 years old? It's kind of like you wonder how much Griffey would have ended up with. And I think 800 is within the realm of possibility if he stayed healthy his whole career.
Yeah.
Like, I know that seems like a ridiculous number, but...
But that's the thing. Okay. Like, that's one has 800, because it's so hard to stay healthy and that good, right?
The best players have injuries. Okay? Yeah.
He's played... The exact stats, 2011, he played 150 games, okay? 2014, 145. 2017 and 2018, 159, 158. 2021, he played 139. Every other season, he's within like 100 to 120.
Every other season, he's missed like at least 35% of the games.
2015, he ended 2015, he was in 74. I think that was the year he got hit in the face. 2019, 18. You know, it's just like
that's the thing. If you take out the hit in the face instead, he was pretty durable with the Marlins. But look, I remember he was not nearly as big as he was when he was on the Marlins as he is now. Like, he definitely took, you know, his later years with the Marlins, and he had that great year, and he probably was thinking like, oh my God, like he probably, you know, that's when he probably got into it, and he thought that, you know, like, that's the key. I'm going to keep working out. But really, I think that's really hampered him. And it's all, you know, it's all cool that Stanton is just like, he's this monstrous dude. But I really do think that's hampered him. I really do. Look, with baseball, a lot of these like baseball programs, like weightlifting wise, or like, you know, the lifting programs for baseball, they'll give you rubber bands. Like, they're not, like, there's no heavy weightlifting with most of baseball, because it's really, baseball is all about those quick twitch muscles and quick movements. And like, you don't get that by getting big bulky muscle. You get
baseball
that by getting
so
like that
much
lean
more about
muscle.
Agility and flexibility and speed than it is about having like 200 pounds of muscle on your body.
Right. Like, obviously, you know, it's not like the greatest example because this guy got popped for steroids. But, you know, like baseball bodies like Fernando Tatis, like that's what like guys look for, like that tall, skinny, lanky, like he could still hit a ball a mile. Right. He still could pop out 40 home runs in a year. Like, you don't have to be like huge and ripped like Stanton. So
Xander like Bogart's a good example.
Just, Bogart. Think about San Diego. OK, even like Mike Trout. Trout is not by any means ripped.
Like, I would say he's pretty cut, but he's got
like a cut, but he you don't
he's
look
not
at
super
him and go,
big. He's not tall.
Exactly.
Look, there's like levels. Like there's a lot of guys who are in very good shape, but like I said, Stanton is just like it's like overkill almost. And you see, like really when it's like how many hamstring strains and tweaks, and it's just it like I said, at a certain point it sucks because it's something that like when it happens, it's something you're not like, oh my god, I can't believe this. It's you know, oh yep, there's Stanton, IL. See you in May, probably June. So, yeah, it's like I said, it's for like, you know, Cole and stuff. Like this episode's kind of been centered around Cole and Stanton. And, you know, we couldn't have asked for better things from Cole. And, you know, Stanton, it's so frustrating because he got off to such a good start. And like I said, probably not going to see him for the next month or so. But guys, let's look ahead. A few more things about this week. Domingo Germán, I mean, but that whole
gotta
incident
give him
with
his time for what he
you
did.
Gotta give him his credit. Rocco Baldelli, I was very mad. That was
I
a very weird
incident. Hey, did you guys see that Twitter thread where that guy was like, "Oh, his RPMs went down," and it was
like,
yeah.
like 30,
like 45 on his fastball.
And it was like maybe like, he was a little more tired.
Here's a guy who doesn't think fatigue exists.
This is like reporting that his fastball went from 94.5 to 94.3.
Yeah,
right. Like, this is nothing.
It's like reporting like, oh yeah, I was faster in my first 10 minutes on a treadmill than my last 10 minutes. Like, wow, what a shocker. Like, maybe I got a bit tired.
And,
yeah,
and the funniest
like
thing
said,
is, though, is because his numbers from that start perfectly aligned to his RPM figures against Cleveland, and he got bombed in that start.
Yeah.
Right. And to his career numbers. So it's not like he did anything special. And like Boone said after the game that it was – he had too much rosin on his hand. If it actually was something else, something that could get him suspended, like he should be suspended, right? I don't want to seem like we're just like, no, he wasn't cheating.
No, we're not gonna play
but
favorites
if it
here
was rosin.
I mean, are you wait. Are you really questioning Domingo Germán's character? Okay, let's move on.
I'm not. I am, but
anyways, but no,
if it truly was rosin,
spot.
that's a legal substance they put on the mound.
Well, the thing is, people use rosin to soak up moisture. They don't use it to give themselves a better grip on the ball. I mean, it's an effect that it has.
You'd have to be sweating like Aroldis Chapman to be able to build a crust up enough.
Exactly. And the problem was, Germán just likes putting it on his hands in between innings, and he had too much on it. So the umps thought that he had something on his hands. That was the entire problem.
That's similar to the MLB Pintor rule, where like I don't know if they still have it, but certainly you know like the George Brett incident from like 40 years ago where he had it too high up on his bat. And it's like if anything, having it high up in the sweet spot is only going to make the ball stick to it. And, like,
yeah,
hit a home run, they
it's only
going
to hamper its ability. To
right, play. So it's like
Alex,
at this point,
Alex, Andrew,
what is Ross doing?
Andrew was actually at that game. Oh god, but no. Credit to Domingo, right? I mean, just think. Obviously, it's still early in the season, but at that point, you know, the Yankees had lost two games in a row, right? Coming off a super frustrating loss the night before, right? You don't want to have your first three-game losing streak of the year, and yeah, he
first
came
series
out
loss
was
too.
Awesome.
If they dropped that game,
yeah, yeah. So that was a big performance by Domingo. But
performance.
Looking ahead,
it's a good sign.
Yeah, looking ahead, got the three-game set against the Angels and a three-game set against the Blue Jays, all at home this week. No Ohtani for the Angels. We are not seeing Ohtani. I mean, I saw like people, like some people, like, oh, I'm kind of upset about that. I'm like, it's like, you're upset we're not facing their best pitcher? Like, I'm not. Like, with
well,
those, have you seen our
offense? Do you think the Angels are upset that they're facing Clark Schmidt and Johnny Brito this weekend?
Like, man, we don't get to see Cole this weekend. Oh, shucks. Like, I get the whole Ohtani appeal, like the pit, but it's like, look, man, if you get MLB TV and go watch him do it against any other team, like, I do not want to see
today,
Ohtani,
and he's still going to hit in all three of those games. So, like,
I saw the mound thing.
No, he's just going to porch one, too. Like, nothing is more.
I mean, like Andrew just said, he's gonna probably have at least what four at bats against Clark Schmidt and Johnny Brito. So,
yeah.
You know, if I was a betting man, I don't know,
liking
maybe
those odds.
Yeah.
Nestor going game three though, so hopefully we, you know, split the Schmidt Brito games
in between, right?
Yeah, Nestor's throwing Thursday. No, Schmidt. Yeah, so it's Schmidt Brito and then Nestor on Thursday.
So yeah, you gotta win one of those Schmidt Brito games.
Yeah, and then guys, drum roll please, our first Apple TV game of the year Friday.
Oh boy,
and we can't watch it this year.
Oh yeah, that's right.
They made it free for anyone with an Apple account last year. I don't think they have it this year. So
imagine having an Android.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Even so, you need to subscribe to Apple TV Plus, I think, to actually even see the game this year.
And I'm too poor to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like Ted Lasso that much, so I don't think it's gonna be fair. But yeah, guys, six games this week. What are we looking for? You know, the Angels,
they got to capitalize on the Angels. Like, the Angels are, their offense is much better this year. They've worked at, you know, fielding a more competitive team. A lot of, you know, baseball analysts like them as a wild card team.
I still think there's some tungsten, you know?
I still think they're destined for 83 wins maximum. So you got to go out there and capitalize. Like, if the Yankees don't win this series, something went wrong.
Obviously you want to win. Just keep knocking off series wins. The Yankees play six games this week. You want to win no worse than three. You'd like to win four. But I'm not even concerned this early in the year at this point. The Yankees have built,
right,
I don't want to say a foundation of wins, because they're only 10-6 and they're still, even if Tampa Bay loses tonight, 3.5 games out of first place this early in the year. But I'm less concerned with the wins and losses as much as I am the way those games play out. Like, if Clark Schmidt gives up a 3-run home run in the first inning and they just can't do much the rest of the game,
seen way too many times where something bad happens in the first two or three innings and it just looks like the team runs out of gas. It's like it just demoralizes them, take stuff out of that hole.
What I want to see is the offense actually have a pulse with some level of consistency. Like, losing Stanton's going to hurt. Maybe getting back Donaldson later in the week will give a little bit of a spark. They called up Oswald Peraza. We didn't see him on Sunday. Maybe he'll play in a couple games this week. That would be nice. And then you have a bunch of young kids, Peraza, Volpe, and Cabrera, all in the lineup. That's going to be fun.
Maybe Franchi could keep it going, right?
Right. So I want to see the offense actually, like, have a pulse, right? One or two games where they pop a few home runs is fine.
Like, with Stan's going to be out for a month or so. You need someone else to step up, whether that's, you know, Glaber, DJ.
Or we got to acquire someone.
Or acquire someone. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see the bullpen not be so prone to meltdowns. Like, no bullpen's going to be perfect, right? If they lose a game because a reliever gets hit, like, that's going to happen, right? But that whole Clay Holmes debacle on Friday night's game when they brought him in the eighth inning, I kind of get the logic, right? You bring him in to face the top of the order. But even so, and then he wasn't going to bring in Wandy after that. Anyway, it's just like, warmed up Marinaccio twice in that game, didn't bring him in. They said King was unavailable because he threw 25 pitches 2 days prior. It's just like, Boone's got to stop dicking around with the bullpen.
Yeah. See, that I do agree. Trust me, I do agree that Boone has to stop dicking around more than anyone. But, like, I think, Alex, I think you were the one who said it. And I had no problem with Boone doing that. Like, we've talked about that before on the pod.
I like how the idea, like, because he was facing the middle of the lineup. He was going to be facing – he was facing – what was it? Buxton, someone else, and Correa.
I think, like, it was 9-1-2 to start that inning.
Yeah. Buxton, Correa. You want your best reliever to face the best hitters on the other team. So bringing him in the eighth inning is something that, like, we've been saying. You got to do something like this.
If you don't have a legit closer, like a bona fide closer, then hey, man, whatever. This is our guy. Yeah, let's face him. I had no problem with that. Like, really, people were like mad at, like, oh, what the hell, Boone? If he blew it in the ninth, would that have been better than blowing it in the eighth?
I don't know. I would have been more on board if he didn't look like such dog shit in his previous closing out the Cleveland series. He almost blew that in without giving up a hit.
Two walks and a hit by pitch. Yeah. And yeah, almost 3-1.
And that's the thing. It's like Clay Holmes' control so far this year has been absolute garbage.
Yeah, he's looked like Pittsburgh Clay Holmes for since really the last second half of last year, right? Second half of last year is bad, and he's kind of just picked right up where he's left off. So, but really, I didn't have that much.
At this point, I think they just need to scrap him as the idea as the closer. And just give him the Chapman treatment that they gave Chapman a couple years ago, where they just took him out of that role and just kind of brought him in lower leverage situations just to get his confidence back, get a feel for his pitches back, because the Yankees can't keep bringing Clay in close games and expecting different results.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he has one where his stuff is working, because you look at that game that he pitched against the Phillies, he looked disgusting. And that's the stuff that Clay has, but you can't go out there and trust that he's going to do that when he's also throwing pitches nowhere near the zone.
I think he looked awesome in Baltimore too, right?
Yeah, he did. It's something that, like, obviously we've said before, but you know, I've been someone that's like, you know, I've said that Chapman gets too much hate. Like, he was pretty good most of the time, Chapman, but really, like, you look at Clay, you're like, dude, I thought we got rid of Chapman. Like, I thought we got rid of a guy who would just come in and be like, oh, the 10 pitches, 9 balls out of the zone. Like, here we are. Like, and we got Clay Holmes. So it's kind of the same. Obviously, a righty. Chapman was a lefty. But, yeah, very similar. And, yeah, I think, really, it's like you cannot have him as the ninth inning role right now. If you're just going to go closer by committee, that would be way better than having – because, really, you can't trust him right now. It'd be one thing if he was just running into some bad luck, if there was, you know, a couple games where they blooped him to death, if, you know, hard contact, right? But that's not the case. It's like his pitches just have so much movement that – so many times he comes in, it's so tough for when a guy just has all his pitches move so much, because like it could be 3-0 and you need to throw a strike. It's like, you know, if you could throw a pitch starting right down the middle and his sinker could just, you know, cut all the way outside, like that's how much movement his pitches have. So I don't know. He definitely needs to make some changes, because like I said, he pretty much just picked up right where he left off last year. So yeah, definitely the Clay Holmes issue is definitely going to be a recurring theme throughout the year, to say the least. And, you know, and unless they find another ninth inning guy, right, whether that want to be King, Loizaga is back and healthy, maybe Trevino or Canely, who knows, right? Maybe there's a reliever in this bullpen that's just going to be head and shoulders better than everyone else that they're going to have to put as the ninth inning guy, because it just can't be Clay right now. It just can't be, unless he goes on another stretch like he did the first half of last year, right, where, you know, like he basically didn't give up a run for 2 months. Then yeah, you just cannot trust him at all right now. I mean, he had two terrible outings this week, right? First time it worked out, but you know, we saw Friday night, it kind of bit him in the ass. So yeah, it's the Clay Holmes event. Like I said, it's going to be a recurring theme throughout the year. But guys, anything else we got?
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the Luigi shits on Clay Holmes rant.
I mean, it's tough not to shit on him. It really is.
Warranted. I'm not saying it's not.
Like I said, it's really, when we got rid of Chapman, you were like, I thought we were past just our closer getting in the game.
Yeah, we celebrated getting rid of Chapman, and he immediately got replaced.
And also is doing very well for the Royals, like we've mentioned before. So
yeah, it is the Royals, though.
Yeah, it's true. Andrew, any final thoughts?
Probably don't want to do bullpen trustless, right? There's too much volatility right now.
Yeah, they're all shit. That's the trust. So for Luigi, for Andrew, and for Alex, this was the Bronx Bomber Battle Podcast, presented to you by Six Pack Coverage. We'll see you guys next time.